Good morning. It is time to get up with double trouble in the bubble. What a night. The Clippers have a whole lot of explaining to do after the sort of week you never bounce back from. Meanwhile, wait until you see what Magic Johnson called the best defensive play ever. What a night in the NBA. Plus, will they or won't they? A waiting word any minute now that could change absolutely everything in college football. All that and more on the way as we get up with you, starting right now. And there is no reason to waste any time. I'm Greeny. We're in New York. Tons of football is on the way, but we start with an absolutely unforgettable night in the bubble. The first one is not the game of the night. It's the upset of the night. It's the stunner of the season. Nuggets, Clippers, game five. Clips have never made it to a conference final. Can they finally climb that mountain? Third quarter, Nuggets up six. Oh, Nikola Jokic, nice dish. Jeremy Grant, Jokic's 10th assist of the game. A triple-double through three for the big fella. Nuggets up eight. Fourth quarter, Clippers just cannot find a bucket. Early in the period, down by eight. Paul George, what is that? Not long thereafter, Clippers down 10. Kawhi Leonard, another brick. 4 minutes and change there. Clippers are down 15 points. Kawhi, no good. Stay with the play. Patrick Beverly keeps it around. Work it around. Work it around. The ball will find Paul George, and he will find the backboard. A disaster. Doc Rivers can't believe what he's seeing. 2.5 to go. Nuggets in total control. Jamal Murray, oh, he scored 40. And we'll stay with the play because it's a microcosm of the game in its entirety. Look at Kawhi. He's looking to throw it down low. The Nuggets have other ideas. They're going the other way. Kawhi and Paul George go scoreless in the fourth quarter. They combine for 24 points, and they make a stunning exit after a 3-1 lead in this second round series. And the party is on in Denver. The Nuggets come all the way back. They've done it. They're on their way to the conference final. What a night.
I think internally, we've always felt this is not a championship or bust year for us. You know, we can only get better the longer we stay together and the more we're around each other. The more chemistry for this group, the better. I think that's really the tell of the tape of the season. We just didn't have enough time together.
I'm the coach, and I'll take any blame for it, but we didn't meet our expectations, clearly. Because we had, in my opinion, we'd still be playing.
All right, give the Nuggets all the respect in the world. There's no question they deserve that. But it was more of the same for the Clippers, who are now 0-8 all time with a chance to reach the conference finals. They've gone 50 seasons without doing so as a franchise. And so that feels like the story this morning. Tim Legler and Kendrick Perkins have gotten up early with us here. Big Perk, I'm coming right to you first. What is your initial thought on the Clippers blowing a 3-1 lead in this series, including two games that they had huge chances, a 19-point lead, a 16-point lead? What is your number one thought?
They're the biggest front runners in NBA history. When everything is going well, Greeny, you hear them hooping and hollering and pounding their chest at their children and wives that are in the stands and the virtual fans. But when things get close, oh man, you could smell it. You could see it. They heart start pumping Kool-Aid. And I'm looking at this Clipper team, man, they couldn't guard a senior citizen at recess in a nursing home. They were horrible on the defensive end. The Denver Nuggets flat out outplayed them. They had the ultimate confidence, and this is one of the greatest upsets in NBA history. There's no way around it. I don't want to hear nothing about chemistry problems. I don't want to hear none of that. This team was built to win a championship, and everybody except for you and I, Greeny, was talking about, oh, the Clippers got these dogs. But guess what? They do a lot of barking, no biting. Jamal Murray and Big Jokic, they went over the fence and got their ball. They figured the dog was friendly. They started petting the dog. The dog started wagging his tail, and they walked straight out of the front door with their ball and took the dog home with them. And on their way out, the Clippers had a sweet potato pie and a bottle of water to give them on their way out the front door. So I don't want to hear nothing about chemistry problems.
Okay, that is extraordinarily, uniquely, and well put. Timmy Legler, let me come to you. This was a team that last summer put together Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. They were supposed to win a championship. They don't even get close. What happened?
Yeah, for me, you got to take a look at the entitlement that they felt. I just felt all year this was a team that we kept talking about how good they should be on the defensive end of the floor. When you put Patrick Beverley, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard on the floor at the same time, this should be a suffocating team defensively. They never got there. Even when the league shut down in mid-March, Greeny, I felt like I was talking about this team every night, wondering when was it going to kick in? When were we going to see it? They get down to the bubble, and to me, clearly, they carried themselves with a sense that they had the most talent, and so it was going to work out. No adjustments. They never at any point figured out a way to slow down the two-man game of the Denver Nuggets. And I think they really honestly believed that at the end of the day, their talent would win out. That doesn't get it done in the NBA. And I don't want to hear any of this talk that you heard last night about, oh, well, they've been together longer and we haven't been together that long. And it goes to show you, you know, we weren't built for year one of this. This was a long-term project. Don't buy any of that, because that's not the way the NBA works anymore. When you put together teams with superstar players, you're expecting to win it year one, particularly when you're favored to do so. So for me, Doc Rivers tried to own it. I don't know how much he honestly believes that, but he should, because this was his best opportunity to get back to the finals and to win a championship since he left Boston. And that team, just every time you watch them, they felt left you feeling a little bit of emptiness inside, and you felt the exact opposite with a team like Denver. Great chemistry, great coaching, and their two best players played their best when their team needed them to be, and the best offensive players on the part of the Clippers completely wilted, particularly in that first 6 minutes of the fourth quarter when you could see the light got turned up and none of those guys ran toward it. They all ran from it. And the Denver Nuggets basically took their heart in the first 6 minutes of the fourth quarter last night.
I remind everyone who was not paying close attention to this that the Clippers not only were up 3-1, but they had a 16-point lead in Game 5. They had a 19-point lead in Game 6, and now they're going home. Big perk. There's a quote here from Lou Williams saying after the game that the chemistry failed the Clippers. Remember, he missed the beginning of the return to the bubble because of that circumstance where he went to that club. What are your thoughts on what Lou Williams said?
I don't want to hear that from Lou Will also, because even after that, in the bubble, he was sitting up there talking about trademarking some lemon pepper wings. I don't like lemon pepper wings anyway. I prefer honey barbecue. But at the end of the day, when you're on a contender team, your mindset shouldn't be on trademarking wings. Your mindset should be on giving production off the bench, which he didn't do in this series. If you look at it, they picked on Lou Williams. The Denver Nuggets did on the defensive end. They called him up and wanted him in the switch on every matchup, and they attacked him all series long. That has nothing to do with chemistry. That has everything to do with heart and holding your ground. Because I tell you one thing, Green and Legs, they're not going to pick on Big Perk like that every single play and think I'm the weak link on the defensive end. So that's what they did to Lou Will. So I don't want to hear that excuse.
Okay, so we just get started with that. A remarkable night, a remarkable turn of events, and we're only halfway there because that wasn't the game of the night. It was the upset of the night. The game of the night was Game 1 Heat-Celtics in the East Conference Finals. And let's take it right to the fourth quarter. Under 30 seconds to go in regulation, Boston is up 2. Where does Miami go for a bucket that they desperately need? They go to Dragic, who goes to Butler in the corner. Step back, 3 points. That's good. Now, game tied 106. Celtics are going to hold it for the final shot. Jason Tatum would score 30 on this night. 3-2-1 for the ball game. It's no good. And so we're going to overtime at 106-106. 30 seconds left in overtime. Celtics are down 1. Kemba Walker shot 6 of 19. He's struggling from the floor, but this is his patented little step back. Celtics take a 1-point lead. Ensuing Heat possession. Butler working on Tatum. Jimmy Butler would score 20. None bigger than these. Look at the body control and the strength. Plus the free throw. Heat a 2-point lead. 10 seconds left. Boston with a chance. Down those two. Here's the play they'll be talking about forever. Jason Tatum going to the hole. Bam Adebayo! Oh, he says get it out of here. I don't even know how to describe it. Take another look. Watch his wrist. Watch the wrist of Bam Adebayo somehow getting up over the rim and stuffing Jason Tatum in his place. He'd go on to win it 117-114 to the disbelief of so many who were there to see it. And you don't need me to tell you what a spectacular play it was. Let's let Magic Johnson tell you what a spectacular play it was. He tweeted, Bam Adebayo's block on Jason Tatum's dunk attempt was the best defensive play I've seen ever in the playoffs. That's Magic. Let's talk.
And Magic Johnson just tweeted, "That's the best defensive play he has ever seen in a playoff game."
Yeah.
When you hear that, what does that mean?
Yeah, Magic. Y'all hear that? Magic.
You know, you get on that big stage, you just got to make big plays, and I made a big, big play. And, you know, coming from Magic, that's a great comment from him.
That's why he's the heart and soul of our team, right there, on a defensive end. He does everything for us. We love him for that. We appreciate him. I know that I damn sure do. But he was big for us all season.
Michael Wilbon last night after the game gave it the highest possible praise, that play. He said, "That's pure Bill Russell. And there is nothing better you can say about a defensive play in the NBA than that." Mm. Timmy Legs, I know you put together some tape. That is an unbelievable block.
Yeah, it really was. And I think the way that that play started out, Miami went basically to a 2-3 zone. They switched everything on the perimeter. And Bam had the luxury of being able to sit back and just see this entire thing in front of him. At first, he starts to go out because he thinks maybe Marcus Smart's going to come set a two-man game. But instead, once he sees Marcus Smart go to the baseline, Bam just lines up on the edge of the lane. Everything is in front of him. He's got the vision. Now he's just got to time it. And then the technique, Green, this is what I love about him more than anything. The fact that he goes with his left hand. Now, there's a lot of right-handed shot blockers that are going to go to their strong hand right there. And if he does that, his right shoulder and hip are going to have to rotate. He is absolutely going to hit Jason Tatum in the chest with his body if he goes with his right hand. The fact that he went with his left enabled him to have just enough space in between the two of them that there was virtually no body-to-body contact, and then he timed it perfectly inside the rim. You can even see his eyes when you freeze it. He is looking dead at the basketball. And sometimes, you know, shot blockers will come over and they're looking at the player as well, and they lose sight of the ball and they'll hit a guy on the wrist. There was none of that. So you can't ask for anything more in terms of timing, anticipation, and then the technique to actually pull that off and meet Jason Tatum there at the rim. And I can tell you right now, there is nobody more shocked as we sit here right now than Jason Tatum. I guarantee you, he is still trying to figure out what exactly happened. Because once he turned the corner and he cupped that basketball and he gets to the top of the square, he is not expecting anybody to go to that floor in the elevator and meet him where he took that basketball. So I think even as he wakes up this morning, he is still kind of wondering what exactly just happened with Bam Adebayo at the rim. Tremendous play.
No question about it. Perk, Magic Johnson said it's the best defensive play he's ever seen in the playoffs. Is it the best you've ever seen?
It's close, but Greeny, I got to give the block that LeBron James had against Golden State when they were down 3-1 in Game 7. I thought that block impacted one of the greatest championships of all time and in NBA history. But I will say, it's right underneath. Look, Bam out of the Bayou is very special, very special. He could guard 1-5. And like Leg said, as a shot blocker, most of the time you go with your dominant hand, your right hand. For him to block that shot with his left hand with the game on the line was very special. And here's another thing. This shows the makeup of that Heat culture. Those goons from Dade County that I tell you about that get it out the mud. They're not afraid of embarrassment. Bam didn't care if he got dunked on. He knew that he needed to make a winning play. He knew that he needed to sacrifice himself and go and block that shot. Whether or not he blocked it or not, he did. And that's the makeup of this Heat culture. They're not afraid of embarrassment.
Absolutely incredible night in the NBA's bubble. Both of you guys, stay close by. We have much more to do on the NBA as we continue. Meanwhile, as we go forward on Get Up, to the NFL we'll go next. Can you have a must-win game in Week 2? We'll tell you why there are much more than just bragging rights on the line this weekend for one team. Plus, will they or won't they? Can the Big Ten get on the field in time to compete for a national championship? We have the latest coming up. This is Get Up on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's. Your adventure starts here. And by Greenies Dental Treats. No relation. Okay, a Get Up and Go. Let's run through all the news in the NFL world is where we begin. Michael Thomas, expected to miss the Saints' Monday night matchup with the Raiders, suffered a high ankle sprain Sunday against Tampa. The injury typically sidelines players 3 to 4 weeks. He hopes to return much sooner. To the NHL, Damian Woody's Islanders staved off elimination last night, beat the Lightning in double overtime, 2-1. Islanders still down 3-2. Game 6 set for Thursday night in that series. Meanwhile, baseball in the two-game series between the Giants and Mariners in Seattle that was scheduled to start yesterday was postponed because of poor air quality caused by the West Coast wildfires. So we have that from baseball, and we have this, where MLB and its players union reached agreement on playing this year's postseason in bubble settings. The American League Division Series will be at San Diego and Dodger Stadium. National League will be at Globe Life and Minute Maid Park. The World Series will be at Globe Life Park in Arlington. For the opening round of wildcard games, however, it'll be business as usual. The higher seed will host the games at their home ballpark. Another notable wrinkle, there will be no off days in the rounds leading up to the World Series. All right, to the NFL. And the Thursday night game this week is the battle for bragging rights in Ohio. And both teams need a win. Cleveland got blown out in week one by the Ravens, losing by 32 points in Baltimore. They haven't won a season opener since 2004. Meanwhile, Joe Burrow's NFL debut didn't go quite the way he was hoping. He was held under 200 yards passing, something that never happened to him once when he was at LSU. And Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. continue to struggle, connecting on just 3 of 8 targets in the opener. They've now connected on just 55% of their attempts dating back to last season. That is the worst among any quarterback receiver duo. Dan Graziano's in my studio. Neek and D Wood are here. And D Wood, I want to start with you, big fella. I had Browns Nation reporter Jake Trotter on my show yesterday, and he said if the Browns lose this game Thursday night, it's going to go nuts. Those are his words. What do you think if the Browns should lose, the consequence will be on Thursday night?
Greeny, if the Browns lose, it's DEFCON 1, baby. It is DEFCON 1 in Cleveland, because let me tell you, two things. Number one, you get mollywopped by the Baltimore Ravens. And we all know the Baltimore Ravens are good, but that's never a good look on opening day. Then second, you go out here and lose a second straight divisional game in-state rivalry with the Cincinnati Bengals with a rookie quarterback? That is awful. That is awful. Look at what they've surrounded Baker Mayfield with, okay? Since Baker Mayfield has been the quarterback. They traded for Odell. They traded for Jarvis Landry. They signed Austin Hooper in free agency. Okay, they signed Jack Conklin at right tackle. Their number one pick this year was a left tackle. They've given Baker Mayfield everything, every type of resource possible to make him successful. And Greeny, if he loses this game, listen, don't let me tell you, but I just don't think the guy's very good.
Well, so that really is the point. I get it. It's interesting how you pause. If they lose this game and then there's the long pause, that the pause is really the interesting part here, right, Dominique? Like, if they lose this game, we all get it's terrible, it's disastrous. What exactly do you think happens, Dominique Foxworth, if they lose this game?
I mean, I think that obviously Baker's seat gets a lot hotter, and I think Baker's rookie year bought him some leeway to survive last season. But I'm not sure what people are going to point to give them encouragement if he has another bad week. And you look across to the other sideline, and Joe Burrow, a rookie, is potentially having a good game, and they lose. So I think it's bad not only for Baker's future, but for this team's future, because they have such a history of losing, and last year went so poorly. It doesn't take long for a couple bad games for a team to lose confidence in themselves and lose confidence in their coaching staff, lose confidence in their quarterback. The Browns culture is not something that you could just wipe away because you brought in a bunch of new players. That lingers. And if it is in the ambient air of that city with the fan base and everything, this season could go bad real fast. And I know we all know the Ravens are great, as D Wood said, so we expected them to lose that game, but not like that. That was ugly. They got beat like they didn't deserve to be on the same field as the Ravens, and they need to have a big bounce back week or this team could be in trouble.
So, Dan Graziano, my insider, seated directly to my left, what should we expect there? Let's say they lose this game and we're sitting here Friday morning. What kinds of conversations are reasonable to be having at that point?
I think at that point you're talking about how important the rest of this year is for Baker Mayfield, right? How long, they got a new coaching staff there, right? Now they have said they believe in him, they want to go forward with him. But if you're the Browns, you have to get to the end of this year knowing about Baker Mayfield. You have his fifth-year option decision next spring that you have to make. So I think what happens at this point is the discussion about the Browns would become, how do we fix Baker Mayfield, or can we? And then if they were to continue to lose, again, hypothetically, we have them hypothetically 0-2 here.
Right.
If they were to continue to lose, then you talk about, do they, you know, talk about maybe dismantling the crew around him that's gotten so much praise over the last couple of years on paper.
And I know where you're going with that, and you don't want to say it because you don't want to make it seem like you're suggesting it's going to happen. But people will start talking about possibly trading Odell Beckham, right? That's out there a little bit in the ether already. At what point do you think that becomes something more than just a consideration?
I mean, I don't want to limit it to Odell Beckham. They could be talking about trading Jarvis Landry. They could be talking about trading one of their great running backs, defensive players, that kind of thing. But look, going into this season, I know from talking to multiple people there that the Browns have no plans and no intention of trading Odell Beckham. They want to win with him. They think that he will be a benefit long-term to Baker Mayfield. Obviously, it is time to start seeing that on the field. Didn't see it last year. The hope was that it would get fixed.
Nick, I have 20 seconds. Should they consider trading Odell Beckham?
Absolutely not. I think Odell Beckham, they wouldn't get nearly what they traded away for him. And I think Odell Beckham is not the problem. There are a lot of problems there. And Odell Beckham's want to compete and his ability to make plays, I don't think it's a problem, but I do think this is a big test of the leaders on that team. It will be. If they don't come out this week with a win, it'll be a big test of the leaders of that team and the coach of that team and the culture that they're trying to build.
No question. All right, we will leave it there for the moment, but we have much more. DEFCON 1, says Damian Woody. Meanwhile, did we see the best defensive play ever in the NBA's bubble last night? We'll talk about that and more as we continue. This is Get Up on ESPN. We are back on Get Up, and we open this morning with an unbelievable night of action in the NBA's bubble. We run the floor, the Nuggets eliminating the Clippers in Game 7, capping a series comeback in which they were down 3-1. Jamal Murray scored 40. Nikola Jokic had a triple-double by the end of the third quarter. The Nuggets go on to face the Lakers in the conference final. The Clippers go on to a lot of questions. In the East Conference Finals, meanwhile, Game 1, Heat beat the Celtics on that block. Look at Bam Adebayo stuffing Jason Tatum on a play that Magic Johnson called the best defensive play he'd ever seen in the playoffs. They used that to earn a three-point win and a 1-0 series lead. And the East Conference Final continues tomorrow night on ESPN. Jimmy Butler and the Heat looking to go up 2-0. Coverage begins with NBA Countdown, 6 Eastern, followed by Game 2. It's tomorrow on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. Meanwhile, as we close the book on week one in the NFL, several teams underperformed. The Eagles had a 17-0 lead, then gave up 27 unanswered and lost to Washington. Carson Wentz was sacked 8 times. The Phillip Rivers era did not get off to a great start for the Colts. Quite the opposite. They lost in Jacksonville. Rivers threw 2 picks in the loss, including 1 late in the fourth quarter. The Vikings lost at home to the Packers. Minnesota was 5th in the NFL in scoring defense last year, but allowed 43 points in this one, most Green Bay has ever scored in a season opener. And then the defending NFC champs lost at home, the 49ers losing to Arizona, and with several key targets injured, Jimmy Garoppolo completed just 58% of his passes. So I have a poll question up this morning on my Twitter page, at ESPN Greeny. Which performance from a presumed contender was the most concerning to you? Colts, Vikings, Eagles, 49ers, none of them seem like bad answers. But Dominique and D. Wood, I can tell you that the overwhelming majority of those voting on my poll are saying Philadelphia. Damian Woody, what concerned you the most in what you saw from Wentz and the Eagles against Washington?
Well, Greeny, we went into the season and they already had 2 major injuries on the offensive line. So as much as we talked about the weapons and all the shiny toys that they have on offense and the players that they brought in on defense, if you can't block anyone, none of it matters. It's really simple. It's fundamental. And what we saw from the Washington Redskins, they have a boatload of talent in their defensive line. I don't know what the rest of the team is going to look like, but one thing I can guarantee, they will be able to get after the quarterback, and that's exactly what they did against Carson Wentz.
No question. And, Neek, you know from all the times we've been together on this show how much Dan Orlovsky loves Carson Wentz. And I don't even mean to turn this into the joking around piece now. Dan came here Monday morning and said Carson Wentz was the reason his team lost that football game on Sunday. What did you see?
Yeah, I know Dan is watching because he's always watching. And I was shocked to hear him tweet that out and then hear him say it. But I think he's right. I think Carson Wentz made quite a few mistakes. And if you have problems protecting a quarterback and you have a quarterback who has a history of injury, you know who you don't want to see? Aaron Donald. And that's who they're playing next. Aaron Donald, the man who was throwing around 300-pound men like they were children on that primetime game against Dallas last week. That man is coming to town. So Carson Wentz better not hold on to the ball on those screen passes, throw it in the ground. He better get rid of it on time, and they better find a way to max protect, to protect this man, because their franchise, or their season at least, is hanging in the balance if they lose him. And I do think that there is questions in that organization about Carson Wentz, whether it's about his health or about his on-field execution. You don't draft a quarterback in the second round because you have a ton of faith in the guy that you have under center.
Isn't that interesting? You actually, Damian Woody, when you were making predictions before the season began, one of them was that we would see more of the backups in Philadelphia than we expected. What do you see happening there?
Well, listen, yeah, that was my bold prediction. I believe it was last week that at some point we're going to see Jalen Hurts starting a couple games because, listen, we all know Carson Wentz has a propensity to be injured. He's not the most durable of guys. And again, the offensive line is injured and they were under siege against the Washington Redskins. So if Carson Wentz takes that type of beating during the season, he's not going to hold up.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that. Much more from the NFL to go as we continue here. But we are waiting any minute now for word that could change the entire football fall as we know it. How and when will the Big Ten Conference return to action? Did you hear Nebraska President Ted Carter yesterday inadvertently talking on a hot mic? This is what he said.
Look, we're getting ready to announce a Husker Big Ten football tonight.
Oh, really? I heard that was happening. I didn't. I think there's a lot of anticipation about that. Good for you. Maybe that'll get off your plate.
Well, it never will, but it's a good move in the right direction.
Right.
My favorite part of that story, as you bring in Heather and Paul here, was when he later said that his comments were taken out of context. I'm not exactly sure what other context that could be taken in. But Heather, let's just get right to the bottom of it. I know you're talking to everyone constantly. What is the very latest that you are hearing from the Big Ten in this enormous decision?
Well, Greeny, we are expecting a decision today at some point. The Big Ten has not confirmed anything, to be clear. But sources have said that the most likely outcome is probably an October 17th start date, an 8 or 9 game schedule with a conference championship game on December 19th. And if that is the case, that would allow the Big Ten to sneak back into the college football playoff conversation because this year, Selection Day is on December 20th. But I will remind everyone that when the presidents get together, they do things on their own time, their own fashion. So to be determined what time exactly this happens.
Okay, there are so many questions here. Let me ask just a few of them. If they want to start October 17th, let's back time that. I mean, you said they can do this on their own time. By what point reasonably would they have to make this decision in order to have a chance to start that soon?
Oh, at the end of this week, I would imagine at the latest, because if you're looking at a calendar in front of you right now, that pretty much gives 4 weeks to get these players in shape. And when you're talking about contending for a national title, you got to practice, right? I mean, look, before this all started, coaches were saying, oh, we need 4 to 6 weeks to get our players properly in physical condition to play a game. And you saw what Navy looked like against BYU when they hadn't been tackling. So if they need to make a decision sooner than later in order to get the players prepared for an October 17th start date.
And the other I'm sure people are wondering, Heather, is on August 11th, which isn't that long ago, the Big Ten decided we cannot do this. What changed between then and now that makes them consider it?
The medical information has changed. Sources said that on Saturday, this past weekend, the bulk of the meeting, all of it, was focused on at least 4 new rapid tests, antigen tests, that would significantly help the league decrease the time it takes to contact trace. It would allow for daily testing. A similar pattern of plan to what the Pac-12 is very excited about using and having on each of their campuses by the end of this month. But also myocarditis, right? What changed with that? That's a question that has to be asked. And when you think about it, the bulk of the information that has to change when they announce this is the medical aspect of it, because that is the reason that they postponed to begin with.
All right, again, we are expecting possibly word on this almost any moment, and Heather is all over that. Meanwhile, Paul, the floor is yours. Your perspective on this has been fascinating from the beginning. What do you think of where we are right now?
I think this is a very prudent move by the Big Ten, Greeny. They took an absolute beating in the aftermath of August 11th. And part of the problem was the messaging. Kevin Warren simply didn't explain it very well. When he tried it again 8 days later, He failed. And I think that could be one reason why they are taking their time. It seems like they are coming back. That's what all the reporting seems to be pointing toward. But when they come back and announce it, they need to be on page, because to the last time it was really a mess. So why are they doing it? Heather explained it. I mean, I don't think they had any earthly idea of the backlash. I think the country, while we're not in great shape, we are in better shape. I think people are looking around. They're seeing college football for the last three weekends. They're seeing the NFL. They're seeing everything else go off with difficulty, but not without any serious issues. And I think the Big Ten just figured we have to do it. And one other thing to keep your eye on, this is driven by a couple of factors, but Ohio State, I think, is driving the bus here. Ohio State is a legitimate national champion. And that letter that Ryan Day sent out the other day really resonated. And that's why they have to get back this week, and they have to start October 17th, because even with a truncated season, it seems like they would be allowed to compete for the CFP. And I think, why not? In 2020, there are no rules.
Yeah, well, right. And that part of it seems reasonable. But I do wonder, they made the announcement on August 11th, and since then they have parents protesting. They have coaches loudly complaining. They have lawsuits coming from so many different directions. Heather, is there any question but that the players will play? I mean, that's one of the – we've seen a bunch of players already opt out, and I have to believe that's one of the big factors here. What are you hearing from the coaches and others about the possibility that maybe for at least some of their best players this could be too late?
Delicious, meet nutritious in the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, I actually spoke with Ohio State coach Ryan Day in the past couple of days, and he told me that Sean Wade is supposed to sign with his agent this morning. So timing is everything, right? But he told me that if the Big Ten does return, he believes, it's his opinion, that the players who have opted out should be able to come back, even if they have signed with an agent. He said, look, these players have been through so much uncertainty, that they should have the choice to be able to come back.
Okay, we will wait and see. Again, Heather is standing by with us as this news could come literally any moment now. And as soon as it does, whatever it is, we will bring it to you right here. Guys, thank you so much for the moment. Meanwhile, as we continue, I told you clock management was the biggest problem in Denver on Monday night. Looks like someone is ready to agree with me. You'll hear who that someone is. And then, was drafting Aaron Rodgers' replacement the key to rejuvenating his career? We'll get into that and more as we continue. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. Back on Get Up, and let's take a quick trip around the bases, beginning with the Dodgers, whose magic number to clinch a playoff spot is now 2 after their 3-1 win over the Padres. Kenley Jansen redeemed his recent blown save, striking out 2 Padres hitters with the bases loaded, so they get the win. Meanwhile, the Yankees seem to have found their footing again. They put up 20 against the Blue Jays. They scored 7 runs in the second on their way to a win. Luke Voit now leads the majors with 18 home runs. And the shocking team of the 2020 season, the White Sox, moved their magic number to 3 after a 6-2 win over the Twins. They now have the best record in the American League, which is a massive improvement for a team that was 72-89 last year. And we've got baseball for you coming today. A triple header starting at 4 Eastern. Tatis Jr. against Mookie Betts and the Dodgers. And Bryce Harper and the Phillies hosting Jacob deGrom and the Mets. And it's capped off by Mike Trout and the Angels hosting the Diamondbacks. All three games are on ESPN and the ESPN app. Meanwhile, going back to Monday night, the Broncos had plenty of issues during their narrow loss, but Vic Fangio's decision to forego using a timeout or two during Tennessee's last possession has drawn a lot of criticism. Wait until you hear his explanation yesterday. It is this morning's edition of I'm Sorry, What?
I did miss calling a timeout after the second down play from the 29-yard line. When Henry got 13 yards down to our 16, I should have called timeout there. That was the one I missed. It was, you know, it was totally my fault there. I had too much thought into what I was going to call next on defense, and I missed it. All the coaches chip in on that, the offensive coaches, when we're on defense. It was just my miss on that one, nobody else's.
Okay, so I like him acknowledging that he got it wrong, but Dominique, we talked about this earlier this morning. When he says, I was too focused on what I was calling on defense and lost track of the game management, what thought goes through your mind?
I mean, are you going to be a head coach or are you going to be a defensive coordinator? And if that's what you want, if you want to be a defensive coordinator, that's fine. I just don't think that you can be half a mind head coach and half a mind defensive coordinator and do both jobs well consistently. And it seemed like he was insinuating that he was expecting someone else to kind of tell him to take a timeout in that moment, which I'm not completely against. I'm down with division of labor, but then someone needs to come through in that moment and make the call. And it's going to fall on him at the end of the day, which he took responsibility for, but you need to make sure that one person is responsible for that. He said it seems like sometimes the offensive coaches pitch in. When you have a bunch of people doing one job, sometimes it doesn't get done. And if you have one person doing multiple jobs, neither of them get done. It just seemed to me like they were disorganized and not ready for a season. It's not like it's a new coaching staff. So whoever's supposed to be managing the game needs to be managing the game. Whoever should be calling the defensive plays, the defensive coordinator should be calling defensive plays, Fangio.
For whatever it's worth, coincidental or not, they have lost four games since he became the coach in which they had the lead with 30 seconds or less. No other team has lost more than two. There's the look at that number. D. Wood, what do you think of that?
Greeny, I mean, listen, time management is like one of the ultimate skills that you have to learn in the National Football League. And listen, he talked about Steven Gostkowski having a rough night. I get it. The kicker was off. But time is not your friend at that point in the game. You ask any player, the one thing you need to do, give me time. If they score, I need time to operate. And he let the clock just tick, 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 all the way down. And the Tennessee Titans milked the clock all the way down. He's not a young coach. This man has been in the NFL since I was in elementary school. So you would think that he would know time management at this point.
It's a horrible mistake, and it's got to be a horrible way to lose. And again, maybe it's just a coincidence they keep losing these close games, and maybe it isn't. Meanwhile, we have a new feature for you, big fella, and we call it Knock on Wood for Damian Woody. Let's take a look, and we'll go through some of the big topics that D. Wood has set for us this morning. Let's start with this. What did you see, GQ, D. Wood, from Kyler Murray?
Hey, Greeny, knock on wood. Kyler Murray has arrived, ladies and gentlemen. Kyler Murray has arrived. Hey, we've talked about the past couple years, the last two MVPs being quarterbacks in their second year, Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes. Well, guess what? Kyler Murray is on his way. All he did was go into the NFC Champions house and beat those boys. Now, listen, Kyler Murray is going to be battling Russell Wilson, best quarterback in the NFC West. That's how far along he's come in a short period of time. Kyler Murray is the man right now.
Love it. All right, next, knock on wood. How about this block by Trent Williams?
Uh-oh. Knock on wood, Greeny. Trent Williams had a lot to get off his chest. And when you've been in an organization like the Washington football team for all these years of pain and losing and infighting within the organization, and then you get out to an organization like the San Francisco 49ers who just coming off a Super Bowl, man, you got a lot of pent up emotion and energy in you. And all he did was just unload on that boy. Man, watch out for this Mack truck. Like you always say on defense, keep your head on a swivel, baby.
Finally, D. Wood, knock on wood. What did you see from Aaron Rodgers Sunday?
Knock on wood, Greeny. Aaron Rodgers is a bad man. Listen, and I got to own up to it. I've been one of the main ones saying that Aaron Rodgers has been on a decline the past couple of years. The Green Bay Packers went out there and drafted his successor in the offseason, and all Aaron Rodgers did was show us vintage Aaron Rodgers. He did it from the pocket. He did it outside the pocket. He was pinpoint accurate. Everything that Aaron Rodgers had shown in the past, he showed again this Sunday. And I tell you what, if we see this consistently, Aaron Rodgers might find himself back in another Super Bowl at the end of this year.
That is exactly right. Knock on wood if you're with me, and I am with you. And Dominique, I want you to – maybe someone is just crazy enough to say this, that the Packers drafting Aaron Rodgers' heir apparent is actually the best thing that ever happened to him, that sometimes even a player like him needs a little reality check and a little fire underneath him, and that maybe it actually – he's talking during the offseason about going back and looking at 10-year-old tape. Maybe he doesn't do that if this doesn't happen. Maybe this winds up being one of the things that does rejuvenate Aaron Rodgers at this stage of his career.
My original inclination when I hear something like that is to dismiss it, because that is to suggest that he wasn't doing the best he could in the past. And for some reason, drafting a young guy behind him is going to make him work harder. He didn't want it that much in the past. And that, to me, sounds foolish. But when you actually think about it, you can't manufacture emotion. There's no way that you can create scarcity where there is none. And sometimes the best players under those situations do play really well. But I would pump the brakes a little bit on D. Wood over there knocking on wood for Aaron Rodgers, because the Vikings lost their three top corners, and no one said that Aaron Rodgers wasn't capable of having games like this. He had games like this last year. He had games like that in recent seasons. The problem with the guys that they get older, and the problem we saw with Aaron Rodgers, not that he can't reach those heights every now and then, it's whether he can do it consistently or not. I'm not willing to bet against him because of what we've seen recently, but let's calm down. He hasn't earned his way into the great knock on wood segment after just 1 week.
Very quickly, why does Damian Woody have that look on his face?
Wait a minute. Now, Nick, you're not going to jump on my segment and then try to take over my segment. This is knock on wood, damn it.
I'm just saying. I'm showing your segment the proper respect. I'm saying 1 week don't earn you the right into the long history of knock on wood segments.
This is the first one.
D-O-B on my segment. I know that.
We will do answer the question a little later, Dominique, and then maybe D. Wood will disagree with you there. Meanwhile, Dan Graziano, let me come to you. What is your sense of that? Another reasonable explanation is that it's the second year in an offense, and he gets more comfortable with it and all the rest of that. What are you hearing coming out of Green Bay?
I think that's part of it. There's no doubt about it. I think what I'm hearing coming out of Green Bay from the coaching staff there is that Aaron Rodgers seems like he's in a pretty good headspace right now. I've heard talk about how the team has rallied around him in camp, not just because he's Aaron Rodgers, but because of how outspoken he has been as a leader in their conversations that they've had in the locker rooms on the social justice stuff and the stuff they're doing in the community. So a lot of stuff happened a lot of things happened in the NFL that galvanized a lot of teams this year and maybe elevated some leaders. So it's possible that Aaron Rodgers could be in a position where he is energized by a lot of different things that have nothing to do with Jordan Love.
We'll see. One way or another, after an offseason of extraordinary discontent, at least through 1 week. So far, so good for Aaron and the Packers. Guys, we'll leave it there. Outstanding. Knock on wood for the first time. Meanwhile, coming up, we were promised the battle for L.A. Nobody told the Nuggets. Should LeBron be worried? We'll talk about that next. Get up on ESPN.